Hello and welcome to Pond Jumpers, the international podcast for open source developers. This is episode number 2 in review about Lyft, the Scala-based web framework, recorded July 26, 2009. Hello, I'm Greg Turnquist from Harris Corporation.
And I'm Russ Miles from Open Credo in the UK.
I wanted to welcome David Polak, the creator of Lyft, to Pond Jumpers, and you know, I really appreciate you taking time out of your weekend here to chat with us.
Well, I'm happy to do it, and thanks for the opportunity.
We always seem to try and nab people at weekends. You'd think we didn't do this for a living. okay, so David, you meet me in passing in a corridor, and I say to you, I'm about to jump on the Ruby and Rails bandwagon, or I'm about to jump on the Groovy and Grails bandwagon, and I need convincing. Give me a 30 seconds. Why should I use Lyft?
Lyft is going to allow you to build apps that are far more interactive than Ruby on Rails or Grails. Lyft is going to give you more scalability than Ruby on Rails or Grails, and Lyft is going to give you code that's more type safe, which means it's more maintainable over time than Ruby on Rails or Groovy and Grails.
Oh, good move. Right, cool, okay. So there's quite a few things you touched on there. So you mentioned scalability. How does that come plugged into this? So how do I get that? I'm always very skeptical when I hear scalability comes baked in. Convince me.
Okay, so just natively, Scala is going to execute 6 to 20 times faster than Grails or JRuby code.
Cool.
So right there, you've got more scalability. In a bunch of tests that we've done, full soup to nuts of going through the application server, hitting databases, rendering complex pages, we're 6 times faster than Rails.
Fantastic.
And so you get that for free. So kind of just starting right there, there are a lot of code patterns and code paths in Lyft that are a lot more efficient than the code patterns and code paths in Rails.
Could you give me one example? Is that just pick one of the biggies?
So anything that you're going to do with Ajax or anything is going to be fast pathed in Lyft. So you don't have to set up the whole routing table, go through the routing table, go through a whole bunch of code just to execute your controller. With Lyft, anything that's Ajax related is fast pathed in Lyft right to a function that you associate with your particular Ajax or with your particular component on the page or with your particular JSON.
Okay. That makes a great deal of sense. So what you're saying is that the sort of object oriented paradigm is a little bit, it almost leads you towards this broken model of jumping through lots of hoops to get from an Ajax request to what is constitutes your object, whereas you mentioned this fast path, which is a phrase I really like, where in Lyft you can go straight through and it's very simple. You're going straight through to the function that delivers what you need to do.
Correct.
Cool. Okay. Very, very quickly. Sorry. So Scala is, according to the script, right, Scala is a relatively new language. I've used a bit of Scala. I know the guys in Spring Source when I were there were very excited about some of the things that you could do with Scala, particularly in reference to things like integration, integration architectures and message-based, event-based architectures. That might have informed some of your decision, but why did you particularly decide to use Scala for Lyft?
I did Ruby and Ruby on Rails consulting for a couple of years, delivered a bunch of different products to commercial customers, and found that the MRI, especially the C-based Ruby runtime, was particularly unstable. I'm a Java guy going back years. I started doing Java coding back in 96, was the first large-scale user of WebLogic back when they were 6 guys working out of like some shared office space in downtown San Francisco. And I really like the JVM because the JVM gives you a lot of manageability. It gives you a lot of predictability in how your code is going to execute. And also, all the ops staff I've ever talked to, with the exception of .NET shops know the JVM and can deal with the JVM. A bunch of Ruby and Ruby on Rails projects and finding performance limitations, a lot of just core dumps randomly, and other stuff. I said, I've got to find something new and something better. And kind of bounced around looking at different languages, looking at different things, and found Scala, and this was in 2006. And it was kind of the right blend of everything. The syntax for Scala is as lightweight as the syntax for Ruby, as lightweight as the syntax for Groovy. But at the same time, you have full type safety, but the type safety doesn't get in your face. The type inferencer kind of does the right thing. There's also something called structural typing, which is the equivalent of duck typing, where you can basically say a particular parameter can be anything as long as it has a foo method or a bar method. So it gives you the same capabilities that you have with Ruby or Groovy, where you can pass any kind of object into a method. But at the same time, Scala has a lot of stuff in terms of default immutable data structures that make coding easier, make reasoning about coding easier, and making tests easier. Because if you don't have to worry about your data structures changing out from underneath you during the execution of your code, you can actually write tests a lot better, because you can test your unit tests actually compose correctly so that things aren't going to change based on some global changing someplace else in your code execution. Was that too long?
No, that's perfect. Cool.
No, I find that really fascinating too. I've been reading blogs about things like Groovy, Ruby, Scala, and you know, I've drilled into Scala more from, you know, it looks like a fascinating language to me. But I've read some blogs, people comment that Scala is a bit hard to read, and I understand where they're coming from. It's maybe a little challenging, and I was wondering, you know, do you have any perception that maybe for some people Scala has repelled them from looking at Lyft, or would you maybe argue the other side of the coin that perhaps Lyft has actually made Scala easier to pick up and embrace for people? What's been your perception of that?
I wrote a blog about 2 or 3 months into my experience with Scala, comparing Scala to Ruby. At that time I thought that Ruby code was prettier than Scala code. I think a lot of beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and beauty is in the eye, kind of things become part of your comfort level. It's probably easier to write ugly Scala code than it is to write ugly Ruby code. But you can also write pretty Scala code. One of the things that I tried to do is I tried to have single statement methods and compose my single statement methods into more complex methods. Don't always achieve it, but that's one of my goals. Having single statement methods makes code a lot more readable. There are a lot of things in Scala syntax that make DSLs easier and better to write than Ruby. And if you take a look at SBT, the Simple Build Tool, you can see some pretty spectacular DSLs there. So, I don't know, 6 to 1, half dozen of the other, depends on kind of what your eye sees. My guess is that Lisp developers, you know, think that everything that's got curly braces is god-awful ugly. small talk guys, my God, where are my square braces, man? Personally, I don't like curly braces as much. Curly braces kind of rub me a little bit the wrong way, so I try to have as few of them in my code as possible. But, you know, it becomes a taste thing. You know, do you like pastels more than you like, you know, fall colors or something like that? I think that's what it boils down to. And once people have spent time in any of the languages and their eyes see the languages in a particular way, I think it becomes easier for them to say, this is beautiful and this is the norm.
You mentioned about 2 to 3 months into using the, or working on that is when you wrote that blog. But would you say that was about the same time frame for you to kind of get the hang of Scala? I know every new, you know, language that you embrace takes some time factor, and I'm just kind of curious what time frame, if you were to suggest to other people, how much time would you suggest, hey, give Scala this amount of time, and you ought to be able to catch on?
That's a tough one, because I think that at least for me, I started really within the first week or two writing Scala code comfortably, but looking back on my code, it looks just like my Java code. It took me maybe 2 years, maybe more, until I really felt that I was proficient with blending functional paradigms and object-oriented paradigms. And, you know, once again, a little bit of history of me. I grew up writing machine language for 6800 and then 6502 and BASIC and C and C++ and Objective-C and Java and Ruby. So, like, my whole life has been imperative immutable code. I never did Lisp. I did a little bit of Smalltalk, but, you know, it's always been build me up a bunch of objects, do setters on the objects or properties on the objects, blah, blah, blah. And thinking in a transformative way rather than in a I'm going to give instructions to the machine way took me a lot of time to be comfortable with. A lot of what I tried to do in beginning Scala, which was the book I wrote this year that's published by A Press, got to put the plug in there for that. I started off and dealt almost exclusively with immutable data structures, but did it in a way to try to get Java and Ruby and Python developers kind of used to the fact that you can do a lot of stuff with immutable data structures and they don't get in your way. But it took me years to kind of break my brain of the, oh, I'll just use a bunch of getters and setters paradigm. And if you look through the Lyft code, you can actually see, you know, if you wanted to do you know, mining of the Lyft code, you can see how the patterns in Lyft have changed over the last few years, from stuff that is a lot more recognizable as Java or Ruby-ish code into stuff that's a lot more recognizable as functional code.
Well, I really like your analogy there, David, to, you know, picking different paint options, because it goes back to the whole feeling that I have that software development is very much a craft. And what we're getting with all these great languages, the fact that they're talking to JVM is really sweet, but what we're getting with them all is this ability to paint better pictures. And I think that's, it's, I mean, we've all talked in the past about encouraging people to pick up a new language, but I think it's great. Let's put a drop in for the beginning Scala book, because it's one I have, and it's excellent. So yeah, definitely, if you're going to pick up a new language today, there you go. Okay, so... I guess the other question that is going to be on the lips of a lot of people, possibly a lot of people who don't do a lot of web application development, actually, is the old sort of, you know, why aren't there enough web frameworks already? Now, I can understand that actually there's probably lots of things about web framework. But is there any few sort of areas, we talked a little bit about it, but maybe delve a bit deeper, that Scala and Lyft make web applications, not, you know, web frameworks, not suck as much?
I think it's really tough to do any kind of good programming system, any kind of good framework, because the folks who have enough experience to build a credible framework also don't always think about how hard things are for developers who aren't as experienced as they are.
So that's basically, if you're good at it, you don't feel the need to have something to help you do it, I guess.
Yeah, or that's part of it, and part of it is also very often engineers will look at things from the engineering perspective rather than from a more consumer perspective. So if you take a look at most of the web frameworks that are out there, they are... nice abstractions on top of the HTTP request response cycle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of, I don't care about what TCP is, even though I use it all the time. You know, I don't care what the inner workings of TCP are. I just want to be able to, you know, move data across my network. I shouldn't have to think as much about the HTTP request response cycle.
Hey, Greg, you back?
Yes.
Cool. Okay. Sorry, David. Can we go over that last bit just one more time?
Sure.
I think I got the gist. But so go for it.
So basically, tools I think very often are developed by engineers who don't see that it's hard to do certain things. And rather than trying to develop a web framework that is just a better abstraction up on top of HTTP, what we've tried to do with Lyft is make something that's a better way to bind user interface elements to the backend data or to backend actions. And HTTP happens to be the transport mechanism, and we have to do stuff within the bounds of the transport mechanism. But at the end of the day, trying to get applications that are more interactive and more oriented towards the user does something and data is updated on their screen, or there is an event that takes place in the server that causes the user's state to change and that's immediately updated on their screen, is kind of what we've been trying to do with Lyft. You know, I've borrowed a lot from Seaside, borrowed a little bit from WebObjects, taken some pages out of Ruby on Rails, Django, you know, a lot of different web frameworks, and tried to roll kind of the best of the abstractions into Lyft. But all and be all, no, and I think that something, you know, something better will come along. We will hopefully evolve Lyft to be something better over the years. But it's all about trying to make it easier for the developer to, you know, using your analogy, take what's in their mind's eye and reduce it down to tangible, runnable code.
Cool.
Now, one thing I've noticed you mentioned earlier is you talked about Ajax and how it kind of streamlines the process to get the Ajax code into the web app that you're building. And I wanted to hear more about the pros and cons of how Lyft supports Ajax, and also about Comet as well. I mean, I've heard all about Ajax, but I really haven't heard very much about Comet.
So Comet is long polling. So you the browser opens up a connection to the server and hangs out until server state changes. When server state changes, the HTTP request is satisfied and the contents of the browser window are updated. That's kind of it in a nutshell. There's, you know, a bunch of stuff where you don't want to keep the connection open for too long because proxies get cranky about that, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, that's kind of the basic idea. And what we've done with Lyft is we've said there are particular components that are long-running components, that are long-lived components. The components can appear on multiple pages. The components keep their state either for the length of the session or for a certain number of minutes after the most recent page that they've been displayed on has been left by the user. In order to update the user's view, when state changes on the server side, the component things, it either says re-render yourself, and the whole rendering machinery for that section of the browser is done in Lyft, and the code is shipped over to the client, and the client is updated. Or alternatively, you can do something called a partial update, which is send a series of JavaScript commands down to the browser that say, okay, do something that's going to update the state in the browser. So, for example, you might say, you know, a new chat message comes in. You don't want to redraw the whole chat window. You just want to insert the chat message at the bottom of the list of chat messages. So that's what we've done with the Comet stuff. With the Ajax stuff, we bind user interface elements on the browser side, or alternatively, we supply a generic JSON call. The call gets invoked, and, you know, under the covers, whether you're using jQuery, Yahoo UI, or some other JavaScript library, an Ajax request is made on the server. Part of the Ajax request contains a GUID, and the GUID is a reference to the function that handles the particular thing that the browser is requesting. And the data from the browser is handed off to the Ajax function, or to the function handler, and the function handler has to respond with a JavaScript command. So Lyft has a strongly typed collection of JS commands, which are a DSL that describe a series of things that can be reduced into JavaScript code. Lyft the function handler has to return a JS command, has to return some JavaScript, and then that JavaScript is sent back to the browser. So from the developer standpoint, 10 or 15 characters worth of stuff that says, okay, here's a simple function that takes a string, does something with it, and returns a JavaScript command to the browser. And you don't have to worry about all kinds of other machinery. You don't have to worry about three files. It can literally be on one line in your source code to respond to a particular AJAX command.
Very cool. Very cool. So, one of the things that I'm really keen on there is sort of convention over configuration, which is one of the aspects, I think, that particularly actually Grails with a G brings to the mix and makes quite useful, because I can define my own, essentially my own DSLs and artifacts, which allow me to extend things in a more fluent way for a particular domain. Is there other features like that inside Lyft that I could take advantage of? And so I guess the first question is, what conventions are there? You mentioned patterns, it's possibly a similar thing. And also, is there a means or mechanism for me to extend Lyft? Maybe I'm thinking along the lines of the plugins kind of architecture you have in Grails.
So Lyft has a lot of stuff that's done by convention. So when you to associate in the user interface on a web page to a comet component, you literally say, you create a tag, Lyft colon comet space type equals, and then the class name of the comet component. Not the fully qualified class name, but just like chat or foo or bar. Lyft knows to look in a series of directories, well-defined directories. You can extend the list of what the well-defined directories are for a class named, chat or foo or bar that extends comet actor. And if it finds one of those, it instantiates it. The same thing is true of Lyft snippets, which are the equivalent of controllers. So the Lyft snippet is a binding between the HTML view and some business logic in Scala. And once again, it's all done by convention, so you can specify the name of the snippet handling class, or you can specify the name of the snippet handling class and a method to execute on that class. And Lyft kind of does the right thing and instantiates stuff. You can also override that functionality to say, if I'm requesting the snippet baz, here's the class that handles the baz snippet. And so you can override the functionality, but by default, out of the box, you get the convention stuff. Every part of the way that Lyft handles the HTTP request response cycle, there are intercept points that are defined as functions in a packet, in a singleton called Lyft rules. So Lyft rules actually defines the flow of the HTTP request response handlers. And you, in general, using either functions or partial functions, which are better known as pattern matching, you can change the behavior of how Lyft handles any part of the HTTP request response cycle. You know, how does Lyft look up snippets? Well, you can use the default way, or you can override it and insert your own function. How does Lyft route particular URL requests? You can either use it the default way, or if there are particular URLs that you want to handle in a particular way, you can use a custom dispatch to dispatch to those to a function that's going to handle those. You know, so there's all kinds of places where you can intercept things. Do you want to go through and do a further pass to, modify the XHTML so that it's compatible with IE? You can do that. How do you want to take the fully formed XHTML and respond, put in, insert doc types, etc.? You can modify that in Lyft rules. How do you want to rewrite headers? You can do that in Lyft rules. So kind of all those places where you would want to have control over the cycle, you have control over the cycle.
Sweet. So basically, you have the conventions, and they're all there. But if you need to override them, there, it sounds like it's a very sweet single point of entry to start thinking about those possibilities. And one question that occurred to me is, I've got a bunch of legacy Java stuff. I say legacy, you know what I mean. Stuff that my friends have developed and I don't really want to rewrite. And I want to call it within my Lyft application. I'm a relative newbie to Scala and Lyft, so I've got a bunch of code. How easy is it for me to reuse it in my application appropriately?
I've run into one issue, and this was back in the Scala 2.6 days, where there wasn't 100% compatibility between a Java library and Scala. And that particular case was Java code that had been compiled under Java 1.4 that implemented an interface that had been replaced in the Java 1.5 library with a generics interface.
Okay. Yeah, pretty edgy case then.
Okay, so that's the one problem I've run into. By and large, you can. I've never seen other than that particular case. I've never seen a case where you couldn't subclass a Java class, couldn't implement a Java interface, and couldn't call into a Java class. Actual class layout of Scala code is virtually identical to that of Java code. I mean, the same guy wrote the Java compiler and the Scala compiler, so he kind of makes sure that the bytecodes are the same.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, unless you wanted to improve it, you do it the same way, right? Okay, cool. Excellent. Okay, so of all the things that Lyft does, and we've covered quite a bit, what other features, sort of hot topics, occur to you, David, that you'd actually want people to focus on first when it comes to Lyft?
We have a tutorial that leads people through a lot of the Lyft concepts called the to-do tutorial, and it covers a lot of the Ajax stuff. It covers a lot of the Lyft has its own built-in OR mapper, but it is OR mapper agnostic. So if you have your own OR mapper that you like better, you can use the to-do example. Walks you through creating models with the Lyft mapper. It touches on a lot of the topics that Lyft deals with, and we've had pretty good success with people coming to the Lyft land, playing with the to-do example, and being able to have enough grounding to feel comfortable moving to the next level, modifying the example and doing stuff themselves.
Cool.
Well, I'm going to testify to the to-do example because I actually just recently walked through that, and I thought that was a very excellently well-written tutorial guide. It paused, explained things, and then, it had the right steps to say, okay, now stop Jetty, make this change, restart running Jetty with the sample app, go make these edits, and it really helped, handhold me through writing my first Lyft application. So. That was good development there. And one thing I'm kind of curious about is I'm very interested in community support for any type of open source project. So I was wondering, what kind of, websites are there to visit or discussion pages or forums? What does it take to become a developer? And what about online documentation for Lyft?
So the Lyft book, which was written by three of the Lyft committers, Derek Chen Becker, Tyler Ware, and Marius Donsku, is available online as a PDF. So you can get started with a to-do example, and then you can go read the multi-hundred page Lyft book. And it's actually kind of cool because I picked up the Lyft book for the first time, and I'm like, holy cow, Lyft does this? I didn't know that. I learned a lot about the parts of the framework that I hadn't been working on from the book. And it was a very, very cool experience for me because it said to me that Lyft had grown beyond, the one guy to a community thing to something that is larger than one person. In terms of the community itself, we have a very strong bias towards newbies. We welcome people who come into the community with questions. We learn a lot from the way that people come into the community with questions, because when people come into the community with questions, we know that there are answers that they haven't gotten. And we want to give them those answers. We want them to be successful. in terms of where to go, the key thing is the Google group. It's at groups.google.com/group/LiftWeb. It's pointed to by the LiftWeb.net website. Other resources, there have actually been a fair number of tutorials that have popped up on the web and kind of comments and that sort of thing over the last couple of months, which is also very interesting to me. You know, people who I've never met, people who have been like tangential to the community, have taken it upon themselves to write up help stuff for other people. And there's an IRC channel as well. It's on Freenode. It's #Lift, and there are about 30 or 40 people that hang out there regularly, and we're happy to answer questions and help people through things.
Very cool. So one of the questions that any newbie is going to have, and it might be a really simple answer, it might be you don't need it, but is tooling. In terms of, I mean, obviously Scala's got some things going on there. What's your tool set look like? If you're going to start working with Lyft, what do you use? And, you know, without having to bang the drum for any of the big IDEs out there, what would you pick is, you know, use these things to get started?
So if you're Ruby on Rails, use TextMate, or, you know, Ruby on Rails and Mac, use TextMate. TextMate is a very fine editor for Scala. We, by default, use Maven as our build tool, but there's also a simple build tool, a set of stuff that's been evolved for Lyft, so that if you prefer more of a DSL rather than XML from hell Maven thing, use SBT for your build tool. By default, the Lyft projects are generated so that you can run them in Jetty, although they'll build out to a WAR file that you can deploy on any J2EE container. Have a Derby database built in, but it's just a couple of line change in a configuration file to point to MySQL or Postgres or whatever database, SQL database you want to use as a backend. Personally, I tend towards NetBeans. A lot of people tend towards IntelliJ. IDEA, which also has a very fine Scala plugin. So there, if you're coming from Java land, those are two good options. The Eclipse plugin is going through a revision cycle right now and is reputed to be much better under Scala 2.8. But Lyft is not a Scala 2.8 project yet because one of our dependencies doesn't yet compile under 2.8. But we're working on that, and, you know, the compiler writers are being particularly responsive, so, you know, it's kind of one of those matter of time things. So short answer to your question, wherever you come from, whatever your tool chain of choice is, there are entry points in Scala land for most of your tools, and Scala code is sufficiently simple, at least in the beginning, that you can use Emacs or you can use TextMate and be productive, and it will give you a satisfying experience. You don't need the heavy-duty refactoring tools. You don't need code generation tools because, by and large, those things are unnecessary in Scala.
Okay, very cool. One very last quick question. It's a bugbear of mine. I'm doing a lot of REST implementations at the moment, and I guess it may be a slight abuse of web frameworks, but I've had varying success with different frameworks in creating REST services appropriately. Would Lyft be a good option? Obvious question, right? Because I'm thinking maybe it would be.
So I think so, and I've been the first project that I used Lyft for was almost entirely a web services based project. So we've got pretty good support for REST. There is, for each URL that you want to intercept, you write a single Scala pattern, you know, pattern matching pattern. You say case, req, and then the URL that you want to intercept. You can use extractors to pull different parameters out of different places in the URL. Then you say whether you want it to be a post or a get command. you can put an additional guard in there, and then you just specify a function that's going to return a response based on that request. And there are a bunch of built-in response generators in Lyft. So if you wanted an XML response or a JSON response or a JavaScript response, those are all built in, so you don't have to worry about doing the headers or anything else. They just kind of happen for you. So writing REST in Lyft is generally pretty simple. And if you come and play with it and find that your experience is not the same as my experience, let us know, and we'll try to make it better.
Very cool, very cool. I mean, we're very, very last question, I promise, on that subject. Does it have support for e-tags? That's usually the edge case that was a little bit tricky, but does it support for e-tags on resources and that type of thing, or is that in the works or anything like that?
It does not right now, but you know, one of the criteria that I use for new Lyft features is, does somebody want it? And if they want it, are they going to roll it out to a real project? Those things are yes, then we'll prioritize up the feature.
Oh, cool. We can have a chat later on then.
Yeah.
Well, Russ, right, you're already writing Rails plugin, so what's holding you back?
Well, there's this crazy thing called time that's holding me back. But I'm trying to stop it doing that. Okay.
Well, this is excellent. This is really some encouraging stuff about Lyft. Now, I'm curious, has Lyft been the topic of any conferences lately, or have people been presenting about it, or maybe water cooler talk, and do you know about any future conference stuff where Lyft is going to be at?
So Martin Odersky and I did a co-presentation at SAP on Friday about Scala and Lyft. The DevOps guys in Belgium are setting up a Scala and Lyft. I don't know if it's a full-on tract or whether they're just soliciting Scala and Lyft presentations, but at DevOps this year, there's going to be a fair amount of Scala and Lyft stuff. The Scala and Lyft books, there were three of Scala and Lyft books that were available at the Java 1 bookstore. All three of them were in the top 10 bestsellers. There were, I think, 5 or 6 Scala-related presentations and 2 Lyft-related presentations at Java 1 this year. We also had the Scala Liftoff in the day after Java 1. It was a Scala and Lyft user conference in San Francisco. There's going to be another Scala Liftoff in Reston, Virginia at the end of October this year, and we're planning one in the spring in Lausanne, Switzerland. So, yeah, there's more and more stuff that's happening around Scala and Lyft, and people are coming and sharing and exploring, and, you know, just is kind of working together to learn where we need to go, what needs to happen, and then trying, you know, people are trying to bring us there, and at the same time, the Lyft community is growing. I mean, we've got over 20 committers in Lyft, and there are almost 1,200 people in the user community on our mailing list. So it's kind of growing, and, you know, OSGI support is coming in Lyft this year, which was, you know, some guy said, I need it, and I'll do it, and he did, and it's great.
Fantastic. What's the shape of the OSGI support take? I'm intrigued by that, because having a Spring Source background, there's big OSGI things happening there. What's the shape of things for Scala and Lyft?
It beats me.
Fair enough.
It's actually something that I've got to learn, because some of the partnership stuff that I've been working on to help help bring Lyft into other places is going to be relying on OSGI support. So some of the negotiations I've been having are going to mean that I actually have to learn the underlying technology rather than just, you know, being the pointy-headed boss and going, oh, yeah, it does that just fine.
Well, that's actually – I take that as a positive note, where Lyft has grown to enough size and accomplishment that, you know, not necessarily one person here, you know, knows all the ins and outs of what's coming. And so that tells me that, you know, if sadly enough, if you were to get run over by a bus, Lyft will – continue growing just as fast as it is.
Yeah, actually, I mean, that is a true fact. There are enough committers, and the committers have a diverse enough set of experience that I am very confident that if I were to be hit by a bus, Lyft would go on. And there have actually been a couple of months where I've been projects, and the Lyft list has grown on the Google Groups, and there's been more traffic on Google Groups, and a whole bunch of stuff, which is, okay, it's not just me, it's a whole bunch of people who are doing really good things.
In terms of the business model behind Lyft, right? So I'm adopting Lyft tomorrow. I'm about to bet the farm on it. I'm going to launch my app. Are there professional services out there that people provide in the community? It sounds like a very vibrant community. Someone must have thought, hey, we can make some money from this and be offering some sort of support or professional services or a backing of a company or two or anything like that?
At this point, it's been a chicken and egg situation with that. So there are a number of people who are either Lyft committers or related to the Lyft and Scala community who have said to me, if you bring us, we're ready and available to do this. The number of projects that have that are commercial and based on Lyft that have grown beyond in-house are pretty limited. I mean, Novell has recruited somebody to do Lyft development for a project that they're working on. Sony Pictures Entertainment just posted for a Scala developer for some of their midware or middleware stuff. Brightroll, which is a San Francisco video sharing company, is actively soliciting for Scala developers. But it hasn't grown quite to critical mass yet, where I think there's a business to be had that can support, 6 or 8 or 10 Scala guns for hire or Lyft guns for hire. But when that happens, a corral of people who are willing to do it and very interested in doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a sign of maturity. It sounds like you guys are very, very close. I mean, it's coming by the sound of it. Okay, cool. That's all I have to ask today. Okay, David, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. Thank you so much for your for giving up a good chunk of your Sunday.
Well, guys, thanks a lot for the opportunity to yammer on endlessly at you. And, look forward to members, becoming more listened to, more popular, and, just building the whole Scala and Lyft communities.
Keep yammering on, David. It's good stuff.
The Pond Jumpers would like to thank the Skype call recorder team, who's made it easy to record Skype phone calls. Please send us any feedback or contact us about any potential interviews. We love talking about anything open source. Visit our webpage at pondjumpers.com or send us a message through our contact form or simply email us at contact@pondjumpers.com. All writings and recordings produced by Pond Jumpers are published through a Creative Commons license and copyrighted by Greg Turquist and Russ Miles. The content of this podcast and website does not represent any of the companies mentioned nor their opinions. The intro and exit music is the upbeat Roxanne, Sweet Romana, and purchased from opuz.com, the site for royalty-free production music.
Working from both sides of the pond, the Pond Jumpers are Greg Turnquist and Russ Miles.